Welcome to the Create the Future with Rick Williams podcast. Conversations with leaders who made difficult decisions and built lasting legacies. I am Rick Williams. I speak and write about how leaders can be more successful. My best-selling book, Create the Future, is your essential guidebook for making difficult decisions. This podcast is an opportunity for me and for you to hear how leaders with a wide variety of backgrounds have managed the challenges they faced, made difficult decisions, and had courage when going forward is tough. You will learn important lessons from other leaders. You will find that engaging with our 30-minute conversation will be a great investment of your valuable time. So let's get started. Welcome to the Create the Future podcast. I'm Rick Williams. The Create the Future podcast is a forum for leaders to share their story about difficult decisions they've made for their company or any organization, and in some cases for themselves. My goal is to share these stories about leadership and making tough calls with a broader leadership community, so you will become a more successful leader of your organization. So we have a great guest today with a compelling story to tell and an awful lot of compelling information that you will find fascinating. We'll hear about lessons learned and what they've experienced. I'm excited to introduce you to Peggy Sullivan. So Peggy is a widely sought-after speaker, a performance expert, a TED Talk speaker, and somebody who will help us understand how to be a better performer in your job as you're doing it today. So Peggy, welcome to the Create the Future podcast. Introduce yourself and tell us about your journey up to this point.
Hi, well, I'm really happy to be here today. And I'd like to start off by being really honest with you. My name is Peggy, and I am a busyness addict in recovery. And for me, in the work world, there's always been too much to do and too little time to do it. And I think that's why I've gotten very curious about a subject I call time poverty, not having time for what's important. And so for me, I love helping people really be able to translate their work into meaningful, effective, transformational, bottom line impact stuff where you get the important things done and you push aside the things that maybe are a little lower value. So here I am, and let's get started.
Well, that's great. So Peggy, I hope that listeners today will come away with a little bit better understanding of you, what you're doing, the results that you, from your research, we're certainly going to talk about that. Talk a little bit about how all of this relates to a person who's in a leadership role, has a million demands on them every single day, and how does that help them or hurt them when they have responsibility for making the important decisions that will create the future for their organization?
Yeah, the reality is 96% of us are over the top busy. We want to be less busy, but we don't know how. So the important piece in all of this is, how can I be more productive, more effective, healthier, happier, more aligned with what gives me purpose? And for me, I've spent a lifetime researching it, and I found it's a combination of a three-step framework that works really well. It starts with subtracting your low-value transactions, right? We all spend time on these low-value activities, multitasking, for example. Mm-hmm. We all are guilty of that, and yet when we multitask, it takes us 2.5 times longer, and we make 50% more errors. So subtraction is a big part. So is really diving into the neuroscience of happiness. I wrote my first book about happiness, and what I learned about happiness is that our brain lights up, and it basically sends these superpowers to our body, giving us enhanced ability to focus. We actually think better. We're in a better mood. We're more charismatic. Mm-hmm. We fight off chronic disease. We live longer. But yet, We're a society that thinks happiness is a destination, a thing. We don't create these micro moments for ourselves. And that's why step two in this process I try to teach people is really stepping into micro moments of happiness. I call them happiness rituals. And last but not least, we live in a world where I think the latest stats are 88% of us don't feel like what we're doing is aligned with our purpose. We don't walk away with a sense of meaning. So I think it's really important to dig deep into what are your values? What is your why? What do you want at the end of the day when everything's said and done to be known for? What contributions? What values? So there was a whole mess full, but I think we all know we're busy. And the big thing is, how do we escape time poverty, the sense that we don't have enough time?
That is very, very helpful. How do you think, if I, as an individual, am thinking about what do I do now that I understand what you just said? And you're saying, Rick, focus on your values and what's really important to you and have that as driving how I, Rick, am spending my time. How do you recommend people do that? I mean, how do you actually do that?
I think the first step is kind of reducing the temperature underneath the pot, right? When things are really being thrown at us and we're super busy, we tend to be on autopilot, and that's never a good place to be. So I always tell people to think about what you're doing, your daily habits, and what you can remove. What can you change? As it turns out, as human beings, we have 21 micro habits that really affect our performance. And they range anything from, spending too much time in meetings to, not getting a good night's sleep or eating nutrients or taking care of yourself. So there are all sorts of things that we can do. I have a tool that I call the Busy Barometer. And it measures for all of those things. People can take it free from my website, but basically, you need to understand what's keeping you from what's important. What are your low value activities? And maybe they're habits, maybe they're rituals, maybe you go to too many meetings, maybe you multitask, maybe you doom scroll. Whatever it is, we're all guilty of it, and a habit change is just that. A habit change. Just do it three times, and all of a sudden, it's your new habit.
Well, if I am 28 and I've graduated from college or graduate school or whatever it is, I've gotten started, I'm doing okay. If I really thought about my concept of what's really important to me, what am I really trying to achieve with my life, is quite different than if I am 58 and I've had a good career, and now I'm trying to think about the last stage of my career. How do I, as an individual, go about finding my values, defining what's really important to me? How would I do that?
I think we all should start off at a young age thinking about how can I add value and what does the world need? And those are two separate things. We all have unique skill sets and things that come naturally to us, but what does the world need? What will make the world a better place? And there are lots of answers to that question, but when you find your unique talent and you marry it with what the world needs, you're kind of traveling in the right direction. And you can also just do your homework. Ask the people around you. Ask your reporting manager, what's important to you? If I was 90 days out and you said we had an amazing 90 days, what would have been accomplished? What are you looking for? So for me, it's a lot of it is being a good listener and asking people how you can help them so they become true advocates for you and your cause.
Well, in my book, Create the Future, I talk about something similar to what you just said as your zone of leadership. Whereas your zone of leadership is that intersection between your passions and your strengths. And you will be more happy, more successful in a job when you're in your zone of leadership, the intersection of your strengths and your passions. Because I think it's a very important concept that you're developing. I guess what I'm thinking about in this context is I'm trying to at least broadly keep us in the conversation about decision making, that I think a lot of what I recommend that people do is not feel that they have to make or even should make important decisions by themselves, that they should engage and learn from others. I use the phrase that whatever it is that they're planning to do or thinking about doing, it might be wrong, and they were more likely to be successful if they engage with other people. And that is fundamentally what you're saying as well. So talk about that a little bit. How do you involve other people in finding
Yeah,
your
I mean, I
values
call that
and
human-centered leadership. And the reality is, as a group, we make better decisions. As a group, we have better ideas. We're just stronger together. Anything that you try to do as an individual, if you put people around you who know their stuff, you're just gonna have more ideas and more fuel as to what to do and what's gonna work because you have more experience that's leading into that decision. So I'm usually about, okay, this isn't about me. This is about what's best. And asking other people for their opinions and melding everything together so we have the best of everybody's mind.
So do you you've been working, I'm going to say on your own, I mean that in a positive way, for a number of years, but you've also worked with large clients, Google and others, and you've also worked with larger organizations yourself. Do you have some stories to tell about those experiences, about what you've seen, about what's worked and didn't work?
Yeah, I mean, there's always, tremendous number of stories, but I think for me, when I look at my career, I pivoted into new industries, new positions all the time. I went from being head of marketing and communications in a healthcare company to, leading employee engagement and customer experience at a high-tech company. And I think people are basically the same. They want to add value. They want to feel good about what they're doing. They want to work with people they trust. And every single time, while things changed and I had a lot more to learn, it was about trusting the fact that I can pivot, right? Like I can go from Medicare to high tech. I know I can do this because I've done hard things before. I can go out on my own and run my own company because, hey, I'm research driven and I know everything that I do has some research behind it, which sets me up for success. So for me, it's also about doing the uncomfortable. My mentor always used to tell me, a day without learning something new is a lost opportunity. And I really believe that. I'm going to be moderating at a Medicare conference in a couple of weeks. I've never been a moderator before. I've been a speaker. I've planned meetings. I've been a workshop host. This is new to me. And so in the beginning, I was kind of like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this. And so I just began, just threw in and just started working. And then I started getting AI involved. And before I knew it, I was picking up speed, picking up momentum. The words were flowing. I was having a lot of ideas. And next thing I knew, AI helped me spit out a moderator's guide that was based on all the input that I had put in there about what's going on in the world today. And so I think my point in that is we live in a world where we can do anything, and research is so easy, and it feels so good to do something that's never been done before, something that's really challenging and really hard. And so I encourage people to get out of their comfort zones and to embrace uncertainty and embrace learning new things, growth. And in the beginning, you talked about core values. And for me, growth is a core value. I'm always trying to learn new things. So, number one, I can be more valuable to everybody around us, but also I build my confidence that, hey, I can do hard things.
I got to tell you, Peggy, you listening to you is such a delight. You think that you're like everybody else, but I know you're not like everybody else. And I'm just listening to you say, I moved from this company to a high tech to I had no idea, and I don't mean no idea, but a completely different kind of company. And you just went off and did it. And I mean, why weren't you afraid? I mean, why weren't you afraid that you wouldn't be successful? How did you overcome what normal people would think of? And I'm not that you're not normal. What normal people would think of would be, oh my gosh, this is a big risk for me in my career. And can I
Yeah.
really do it? How did you have the courage to do that?
Yeah, I tend to think about everything as micro steps and what micro steps can I take towards my end game? And I try not to think about, the big macro moment, but just what a couple of things I can do that will give me a feel for what I need to be doing and give me some additional information. And I believe that we can do hard things. When I was 50 years old, my husband had decided he didn't want to be married anymore. And I lost my sense of confidence. And so I thought, I'm going to do something really hard. I've never run before in my life. I'm going to run a marathon. And then I thought to myself, what are you nuts? You signed up for a marathon in 2 months. You think you're going to learn how to run in 2 months? And I just worked backwards and I said, well, what micro steps do I need to take? And when I broke it into smaller steps, it just got very doable. And yes, it was hard to run my first marathon at 50 years old, but it was just a bunch of micro steps. It was just that first mile and saying, hey, okay, I ran a mile. Tomorrow I'm going to run two.
Okay, let me just share a story with you. I had a podcast interview a week ago with an unbelievably fascinating guy who had a career in the Marine Corps. And he finally left the Marine Corps and had a job which didn't work out for a whole bunch of reasons. And then he said, I think I have a set of skills that I could start a company. And he had been doing his last stint with the Marine Corps was actually doing recruiting. So I can start a company that's doing senior level recruiting. And I said, okay, you came out of the Marine Corps, a really significant career there, and now you're going to start a company? I said, how did you get the courage to do that? And we talked about what courage meant in the context of being in the Marine Corps, where people talk about courage in the military all the time. He said, my courage came from my wife. She thought I could do it, that I had the skills, the experience, the capabilities to do it. And his courage didn't come from the Marine Corps. It actually came from his wife, who gave him the feeling of confidence that he could be successful. And what I'm hearing you saying is that your way of having courage was to say, okay, what are the 10 steps I have to make to get there? And I can do step one. I think I can do step two. I think
Yeah,
that's
I think you're
very helpful.
definitely got something good there. You reminded me of a funny story. And when I started off as an executive at a young age, I was always the only woman at the table. And I know that's changed, but it hasn't changed as much as people think. And I can remember when I interviewed for my first executive position, and they offered me the job, and I was brimming ear to ear, and I'm walking to the elevator, and I'm just about to push the button. And my soon-to-be boss says, I can't believe I just hired a woman. And it was 2 weeks before I started that job, so I had to think about what did that mean. And then the very first day that I started, he had an executive meeting, and I was going to be the first woman at this executive meeting in a male-dominated industry. And as I was walking up to the conference room, I heard the guy saying, oh, this meeting's going to change. We now have a woman at the table. And so I walked in, I looked at all of them. I don't know what got me to do this, but I jumped up on top of the table and I said, look, guys, I burp and I fart just like you. But if you're here to really get something done and move the mark, if we work together, we can do some amazing things. So let's get rid of that elephant in the room and let's just do work. Let's just work on what we need to make this company excel. And, I think about that being a really bold moment. But actually, it was a necessary one to break the ice
No.
and to take the edge off for everybody in that room who was thinking, I need to behave differently. I'm like, no, you don't need to be, just bring on your best and we'll work together and figure it out.
That is really wonderful. Let me just share a little bit of my experience. Most of my sort of day job work now is serving on the board of directors of technology companies. And I am a very strong advocate of having a woman, many women, whatever, on your board of directors, because having a woman involved as part of the conversation does indeed change how people, I don't know, engage with each other, think with each other. Women do, in addition to doing the professional work that you are saying, hey, I'm no different than you, women do change how discussions go, how people think about the issues before them. I think it might be helpful if you, I know that you've written a lot about women empowerment. Talk a little bit more about how you see women, well, what do they have to do to achieve where you're trying to go? What do they have to do? They make decisions differently or participate as part of a leadership team differently? Just talk about
Yeah,
that
I
a little
mean, women
bit.
are definitely wired differently, and our brain works differently, and we make decisions emotionally as well as logically. And for women, the tendency to want to make emotional decisions is really front and center. That's the way our brain's wired. So I always love to tell women, think about it first. Don't do anything. Don't say anything. Just be self-aware. Keep it to yourself. Hang on and think about whether you're doing something emotionally or you're doing something rationally. Because for most cases, emotionally, you're going to say something you're going to regret. You're going to do something you're going to regret, or you're not going to be effective. You're going to be known as that emotional person who just blurted out or blobbed out. So I think self-awareness for women in terms of how we're wired differently and making sure that we think as much strategically as we do emotionally. And I'm not saying avoid that emotional. I mean, that's what makes women authentic. That's what makes them empathetic. And I believe that's a huge contribution to the workplace. But I do think that for many of us, it's about being self-aware and really just understanding why you're doing it. Just because you're thinking it and feeling it doesn't mean that it needs to be the next decision.
I have written that you'll be more successful as a leader if you're both decisive and also you're vulnerable. In other words, vulnerable meaning you're open to hearing from others and learning from others. And as I'm talking with you about this, and you correct me if you think I'm wrong, but in a way, what I'm saying is that men need to be more like women at some points, in the sense of being more purposeful about their emotional reaction of values, allow themselves to be vulnerable and open and to learning. And in a way, you're kind of saying that women, in order to be in these leadership positions, need to be a little bit more like men. I don't want to quite see if I'm saying it quite right like that, and be a little more open to logic and less emotional. And the truth is that we're stronger if we're both men and women work together in a collaborative way and learn from each other.
That's so true. And I love people that kind of look at us all equally. I think women still have a long way to go. And I say that because I belong to a leadership group. It's CEOs in the state of Florida, thousands of people. I went to a leadership breakfast. There were hundreds of people in the room and only three women. How could that be? I mean, there was less than like 3% women in the room. And yet I know that the population is much greater than that, especially in Florida. So I think, I don't know why we're not getting the opportunities or why we're not invited to the table a little bit more often, but hey, bring it on. And I love when I'm that unique voice and I can help people see things just a little bit differently. Maybe it'll give them a little bit of shift to make more effective choices or decisions.
Well, I'm going to ask you one final question and then we'll wrap it up. You are somebody who is very clear about, okay, if I have a challenge in front of me, let me imagine the steps I have to go through to be successful. How do you think about risk? And I said, well, why weren't you just afraid to even start? And you said, Rick, I wasn't afraid. I was thinking about what do I have to do to make this actually happen? How do you think about how do you, as a decision maker, who's very confident in what you're doing, how do you think about risk and what might go wrong and whether failure is okay?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge risk taker and I fail forward and I learn from my mistakes and I don't always know the mistakes during it. But when we make mistakes and we have the sentiment that we're going to take a few steps back and look at that and kind of think to ourselves, well, I didn't get the outcome I wanted. What could I have done differently? And I think that's how we evolve into being the best versions of ourselves is when we take risks, when we fail, when we do hard things, and we think about what we can do to get better. But I don't know. I've never been afraid. I mean, when I was a little girl, I remember this day, and it's one of the opening chapters of my book. I can remember being 4 years old and super tiny. I'm still tiny. And my father taking me to a pool to go off a diving board that was over 100 feet in the air. And I can remember him behind me saying, "Go ahead, climb up, climb up, climb up, climb up, climb up." And I remember standing there at the end of the board thinking to myself, wow, this is like really high up. What's the worst that can happen? And so I kind of stood there and I just remembered everything my dad taught me about diving and kind of putting my hands and going over. And I just did one big, huge belly flop. And I got out of the pool and people were clapping. And I was like, I didn't even notice anybody noticed me. And it was their warmth and their ability to clap at my utter belly flop. And it made me feel good. So what did I want to do? I wanted to get up again and do it again and see how that felt. And so I just think that's part of life, right? Climb that diving board, stand at the end and just close your eyes and see what happens.
Well, Peggy, this is great. Thank you for sharing your experiences. You've made a valuable contribution to our understanding of the challenges leaders face every day. So, how can our audience learn more about you and perhaps even be in touch with you?
Yeah, I mean, if they go to my website, peggysullivanspeaker.com, they'll be able to connect with me, find out about my speaking, my consulting, my workshops, the Busy Barometer. I've probably got a couple hundred blogs there, a lot of free tools. For me, my passion is helping people step into their power and helping them eliminate the things that really aren't serving them. And many times it takes an outsider to see that. So, anybody interested in, just stepping into their power position, I'd love to help them.
Well, that's great. I want to thank our audience for taking the time to engage with our guests and learning from our guests. If you have a compelling story to share about a difficult decision, please contact me. Go to rickwilliamsleadership.com and go to the Create the Future podcast section on the website. Again, that's rickwilliamsleadership.com. Remember that you create the future by the decisions you make today. So take time to get your important decisions right and also have some fun. Until next time, be well.
Thank you.
What an interesting and inspiring conversation. I hope you found it as valuable as I did. Thank you for listening. Let me know if you have a compelling story to tell about making tough choices for your organization or for yourself. Coming on my podcast is a way to share what you have learned with a wider audience. If someone you know would be a great guest, please make an introduction. I welcome leaders with a story to tell and important learning to share. You can contact me about the podcast at podcast.rickwilliamsleadership.com. That's podcast.rickwilliamsleadership.com. Please share the link to my podcast with your colleagues. They will thank you for getting them access to these valuable conversations. And finally, please give us a great rating on and subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon Music. Just search for Create the Future with Rick Williams. Thank you for listening to Create the Future with Rick Williams podcast. Conversations with leaders who make difficult decisions and build lasting legacies.